is the disappearance day of Bhochan Das Thakur. We'll read a little about him from Mahanidhi's, Samadhi's book. First, Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita by his holiness Satsarupa Das Goswami, a threat against ISKCON. Shri Gaur Nitai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Radha Madana Mohan, Ki Jai. So I want to mention that Jamuna will be giving a talk someday soon in the next few days here during either the morning Bhagavatam class or evening Bhagavad Gita class. She's eager to come, and then she'll also be coming to one of our evening programs soon. So we're reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita by His Holiness Satsarupa Das Goswami. This chapter is called A Threat Against ISKCON. Prabhupada asked Brahmananda if 50,000 copies of that Godhead magazine were being printed. Brahmananda answered that they were. Good, Prabhupada replied. Turning his attention to Satsarupa, Prabhupada asked how the composing machine was working, and Satsarupa said that hundreds of pages were being composed. Each month, Prabhupada asked Kirtananda Swami about New Vrindavan. New Vrindavan would improve, Prabhupada said. The only thing wrong was that it got blocked up, quote unquote, in the winter. Each devotee in the car felt completely satisfied by his brief exchange with Prabhupada, and they rode with him intoxicated in spiritual bliss. Most of the devotees had raced ahead to the temple on Beacon Street and were waiting excitedly. A limousine pulled up, and again the devotees were unrestrained in their adoration of their spiritual master. Regally, Prabhupada walked up the walkway, onto the porch steps, through the front door, and into the vestibule, where he gazed around at the purple walls and the pink-green doorways. Surrounded by cheers and loving looks, he smiled. The second floor parlor, now the temple room, was filled with more than 150 disciples and guests, and they could see Prabhupada's form rising into view as he came up the stairs. He still carried his white attaché case in his left hand and his bead bag in his right. And although he had just come out of the winter's night, he wore no coat, only cotton robes and a sweater. He appeared radiant. Prabhupada approached the altar. He seemed to notice everything, the small Radhakrishna deities enthroned beneath the red velvet canopy, the larger deities of Jagannath, Subhadra, and Balaram on a raised shelf above the picture of Lord Chaitanya, and his Sankirtan party. Even the brass arati paraphernalia, brightly shining on the small table near the altar. Turning to his secretary and traveling companion, Purushottam, he asked, "What do you think, Purushottam? Isn't this very nice?" Crossing the room, Prabhupada sat on the red velvet vyasasan. He spoke, and the audience was attentive. After praising the London Center, the deity worship there, he expertly made puris for Radha and Krishna. He turned toward the altar and said, "If you clean the deity's utensils, your heart will become clean, cleansed. By polishing the deity's paraphernalia," he said, "the devotees were cleaning their spiritual master's heart also." As he spoke, focusing simply and purely on devotion to the deity, the devotees suddenly realized the importance of this aspect of their Krishna consciousness. "Who has made these clothes?" Prabhupada asked, glancing at Radha and Krishna, their little flounced dresses. "Saradhya," a few devotees called out. Prabhupada smiled. "Thank you very much." Then he threw back his head and laughed. "Is Saradhya still fighting with her husband?" The devotees and guests laughed, while Saradhya covered her face with her hands. "Don't fight with your husband," Prabhupada said. "He is a good boy. Anybody that comes to Krishna consciousness is good." He then asked to see the rest of the house. 100 devotees, straining to see their and hear Prabhupada's responses, followed him as he went downstairs. Although the crowd surrounded him, he remained relaxed and unhurried. He entered the press room, a long hall directly beneath the temple room. A large old offset press, a paper cutter, a folder, and flats of paper stock filled the rooms, which smelled like a print shop. Advaita, the press manager, bowed down in his green khakis before Prabhupada. He rose up smiling, and Prabhupada stepped forward and embraced him, putting his arm around Advaita's head. "Very good," he said. Standing before the printing press, Prabhupada folded his palms together and offered a prayer to his spiritual master. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Advaita asked Prabhupada to give the press a transcendental name. ISKCON Press, Prabhupada said matter-of-factly, as if it had already been named. Keep all the machines very clean, Prabhupada said, and they will last a long time. This is the heart of ISKCON. You are the heart of ISKCON, Prabhupada, a devotee said. And this is my heart, said Prabhupada. Leaving the main press room, Prabhupada toured the other press facilities. Squeezing in, ducking under, standing on tiptoes, the crowd of devotees followed him step by step. He peeked into a little cubbyhole where a devotee was composing type. The typesetters, he said, should proceed very slowly at first, and in that way they would become expert. Turning to Advaita, he said, "Everyone in India who speaks Hindi has a Gita Press publication, so everyone who speaks English should have an ISKCON Press publication." Compared to most authors, Prabhupada's literary contribution was already substantial. But he wasn't just an author. His mission was to flood the world with literature glorifying Lord Krishna. Prabhupada's ISKCON was now 3 years old, yet his disciples were only beginning to execute his plans for printing and distributing transcendental literature. Today being the disappearance day of Lochan Das Thakur, I'm going to read about him from Mahanidhi's Gaudiya Vaishnava Samadhi's book. Sri Lochan Das Thakur. Sri Lochan Das Thakur was a disciple of Sri Narahari Sarakar Thakur, a dearest associate of Lord Gaura Rai, Lord Chaitanya. My hope of hopes is to be near the lotus feet of Sri Narottam Das Thakur, this is a quote, and serve him with my very life. The cherished desire of the fallen Lochan Das is to be allowed by Narahari's grace to sing the glories of Lord Gauranga. My Lord is Sri Narahari Thakur. I am his servant. Bowing down before him, I beg for his service. This is my only aspiration. It's a quote from Lochan Das from the Chaitanya Mangala. Lochan Das Thakur wrote Chaitanya Mangala, which tells many pastimes of Lord Chaitanya not revealed by Vrindavan Das Thakur or Krishnadas Kaviraj. He mentions an especially touching conversation with Sri Gaurasundar, a conversation Sri Gaurasundar had with Vishnu Priya Devi the night before he took sannyas. See Vishnu Priya's biography for the talk. Being a talented musician, Lochan Das told Mahaprabhu's pastimes in beautiful poetry filled with fire and rhythm. Common people could easily understand the divine character of Sri Chaitanya and awaken their religious feelings. As devotees regularly chant the Vedic epics Ramayana and Mahabharata, Gaudiya Vaishnavas still wander through Bengal reciting the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. Lochan Das Thakur, who wrote many songs praising Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, and Gauridas Pandit. Lochan Das stresses that Raganuga Bhaktas must take shelter of Gadadhar Vrindavanishwari to attain Radha Govinda Prema Bhakti. Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Thakur used to print and distribute Lochan Das Thakur's Sri Chaitanya Mangala, while Prabhupada was very fond of his bhajans. While singing Paramakaruna, Srila Prabhupada would plunge into the ocean of Gauranga Prema. Prabhupada wrote an extensive commentary on this bhajan, Bhajo Bhajo Bhai Chaitanya Nitai Sudrita Vivasakori. Lochan Das asks everyone, "My dear brother, just worship Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda with firm faith and conviction. Don't think that this chanting and dancing will not lead to the desired goal. It will. It is the assurance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that one will get all perfection by this process. Therefore, one must chant with firm faith and conviction." His samadhi is in the 64 samadhis area. And he has a picture of it here in this book. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Rayanam namaskritam naram chayvam narotamam devim saraswatim vyasam dato jayam udirayat nastaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utamashloke bhakti bhavati naishtiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Canto 3, Chapter 33, text number 23. There are no purports for a couple of these verses, so I'll go on and read until there's a purport. Jayati Bhagavan Rupam Yad Aha Jnana Gocharam Sutta Prasanna Varanam Samasta Vyasta Chintaya Jayati Bhagavad Rupam. Jayati Bhagavad Rupam. Yada Hadhyana Gocharam. Yada Hadhyana Gocharam. Sutta Prasanna Vadanam. Sutta Prasanna Vadanam. Samasta vyasta chintaya. Samasta vyasta chintaya. Jayati Bhagavad Rupam. Yada Hadhyana Gocharam. Sutta Prasanna Vadanam. Samasta vyasta chintaya. Jayati Bhagavad Rupam. Yadah Dhyana Gocharam. Sutta Prasanna Vadanam. Samasta Vyasta Chintaya. Jayati Bhagavad Rupam. Prasanna Vadanam. Jayati. Meditating. Bhagavat Rupam. Upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yat. Which. Aha. He instructed. Dhyana Gocharam. The object of meditation. Sutta, her son. Prasanna Varanam, with a smiling face. Samasta, on the whole. Vyasta, on the parts. Chintaya, with her mind. Translation. Thereafter, having heard with great eagerness and in all detail from her son, Kapiladeva, the eternally smiling personality of Godhead, the eternally smiling personality of Godhead, Devahuti began to meditate constantly upon the Vishnu form of the Supreme Lord. I'll read the next couple of verses and then another verse. Bhakti pravaha yogena vairagena balisaya yuktanustana jatena Gyanena gyanena brahma hetuna vishuddena tadatmanam atmana vishvato mukham svanu bhutya tirobhuta maya guna visheshanam. This is text 24 and 25. She did so with serious engagement in devotional service because she was strong in renunciation. She accepted only the necessities of the body. She became situated in knowledge due to realization of the absolute truth. Her heart became purified. She became fully absorbed in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all misgivings due to the modes of material nature disappeared. Pramanya vastitamati bhagavatyatma sankshaye nibritta jiva pativa kshina klesapta nirvriti. Her mind became completely engaged in the Supreme Lord. This is text 26. And she automatically realized the knowledge of the impersonal Brahman. As a Brahman realized soul, she was freed from the designations of the materialistic conception of life, concept of life. Thus, all material pangs disappeared, and she attained transcendental bliss. And this is a long purport. So we'll get a good dose of Srila Prabhupada this morning. Purport. The previous verse states that Devahuti was already conversant with the absolute truth. Shikorni Tai, Shishitram Lakshman Haraman, Shishirada Manana Mohan Ki Jai. It may be questioned why she was meditating. The explanation is that when one theoretically discusses the absolute truth, he becomes situated on the impersonal concept of the absolute truth. Similarly, when one seriously discusses the subject matter of the form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes situated in meditation on Him. If one has complete knowledge of the Supreme Lord, then knowledge of the impersonal Brahman is automatically realized. The absolute truth is realized by the knower according to three different angles of vision, namely impersonal Brahman, localized Supersoul, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one is situated, therefore, in knowledge of the Supreme Person, this implies that one is already situated in the concept of Supersoul and the impersonal Brahman. The Bhagavad Gita, it says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. This means that unless one is freed from the material entanglement and situated in Brahman, there is no question of entering into the understanding of devotional service to Krishna. In devotional service. One who is engaged... I'll read that again. This means that unless one is freed from the material entanglement and situated in Brahman, there is no question of entering into the understanding of devotional service or engaging in Krishna consciousness. One who is engaged in devotional service to Krishna is understood to be already realized in the Brahman concept of life, because transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead includes knowledge of Brahman. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. This concept of the Personality of Godhead does not depend upon Brahman. The Vishnu Purana also confirms that one who has taken shelter of the all-auspicious Supreme Lord is already situated in understanding of Brahman. Hare Krishna. In other words, one who is a Vaishnava is already a Brahman, a Brahman. Madhavendra Puri initiated some devotees who were Brahmins when he instigated worship of the Gopal deity in Vrindavan. Even though they were very well-trained and learned Brahmins, and probably initiated somewhere along the way by someone, maybe in their family, he initiated them as Vaishnavas. And this is indicative of, and I think Prabhupada also mentions this in the purport, that a Vaishnava is not only automatically a Brahmin, but superior to a Brahmin. In ordinary Varnashram society, not Daivi Varnashram society, there is division of the different Varnas and Ashrams. And according to the Varnas, the Brahmins are those who are renounced. They're living plainly, cleanly, simply, not involved in the work of the other castes, the other divisions of society, the other Varnas, and they maintain a detached position. In Kali Yuga, however, everything is, as Prabhupada said, topsy-turvy. The proper Varnashram society or Daivi Varnashram is not being followed. Even ordinary Varnashram, in one way, is not being followed. And we have the example of our leaders. Prabhupada says they should be considered to be Shudras. They're not actually Kshatriyas. Those who are leading governments, we find that they are addicted to all sorts of bad habits. They take tax money from the citizens and they spend it on their own sense gratification. And we read of so many scandals of the Kshatriyas who are supposed to be the ruling class because they're not actually Kshatriyas. Prabhupada also mentioned that one of the reasons that warfare, like he was talking about the Vietnam War in the 60s, was such a fiasco, was that the people who were being chosen to fight were not at all qualified to fight. They were also coming from Shudra and unqualified backgrounds to fight a war. So the whole thing was just a great fiasco. And sometimes it is seen that the those who are purported to be Brahmins, and it is also declared in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 12th canto, that the measure of a Brahmin in Kali Yuga will be the wearing of a thread. That's all. Nothing else will be the measure of a Brahmin. And so we have all these strange, convoluted ideas about what a Brahmin is. And I remember when a friend of mine first went to India, he said that the Brahmins showed that they were Brahmins by they would never flush the toilet, because if they touched the handle to flush the toilet, they would become impure. So all of these things are going on in Kali Yuga. No one knows what's what, and nothing is properly situated according to guna and karma. As the Bhagavad Gita says, guna karma vibhagish. Every one should be situated according to the natural acts, the natural propensities. And so we have people who are of the quality of Shudras sitting on the presidential posts, and those who are meant to be Brahmins are actually acting like Shudras. They're engaging in all sorts of unclean activities. Actually, in Kali Yuga, the downfall of the Brahmin caste, of this Brahmin's Brahminical society, was signaled by Sringi, the son of Shamaka Rishi, when he put a snake garland around Maharaj Parikit. He cursed him, cursed a great Kshatriya. So this was actually misuse of the Brahmin Tejas. Brahmins had great power to do natural things, to do very transcendental, mystical. They had mystical power, so they could curse. But he misused this curse, misused his freedom, as living entities sometimes do, and cursed a great saintly person like Maharaj Parikit. And this was, and he was the son of a Brahmin, so this was considered, because he thought his father was insulted and so on. He wanted to retaliate. The symbolic of the beginning of the downfall in Kali Yuga of Brahminical society. So one of Prabhupada's missions was to re-implement gradually into society a proper division of society according to guna and karma. And this would be called Daivi Varnashram, not ordinary Varnashram. An ordinary Varnashram, which is very corrupted today, people adhere to being born in a certain particular caste. Yes, they identify themselves, I'm a Brahmin, I'm a Kshatriya, I'm a Vaishya. By birthright rather than by their activities, by their gunas, by their abilities, by their karma. So this has created a great havoc in society. People clinging to that notion. Whereas in Daivi Varnashram society, people are acting according to what they are naturally attuned to do. And as Krishna consciousness grows bigger and bigger and bigger and millions of people are involved, then society will, at least the Krishna conscious society, will try to set an example of Daivi Varnashram. The difference is also apparent in Krishna consciousness. We see, as Prabhupada has indicated, that a Vaishnava is greater than a Brahmin. The Daivi Varnashram system works properly when God is at the center, when it is an Ishavasya society. When that happens, then the Vaishyas are very liberally supplying the needs of everyone, liberally and even more than is what may be considered necessary. So the Kshatriyas, the Brahmins, and the Shudras are not only given enough wealth and food and clothing and shelter, but they're also they also feel very protected because they have enough of their bodily needs. And similarly, the Kshatriyas were sworn to protect. They were given certain facilities, but at the same time, they were sworn to protect. Just like when one Brahmin complained to Arjuna, we read in the 10th canto, that his sons were dying Arjuna, which is unnatural because the son's not supposed to die before the father, Arjuna swore, as was the Kshatriya's duty, that he would return those sons to him, bring them back to life, or that he would enter into blazing fire. So that was the charge of the Kshatriyas. They were not ordinary people. They could fight many people, and they would protect. Especially they would protect the Brahmins, they would protect the women, they would protect children, they would protect old people. So there was no fear in Daivi Varnashram society. No fear of death, no fear of being mugged, no fear of being attacked or raped, or attacked in the night, or having one's possessions stolen or one's house burned. People were feeling so protected. So to come to this point of reinstituting Varnashram society is a very great and long-term task. It will certainly not be accomplished in a long time, because people of that stature will not just appear suddenly. And similarly, Brahmins were very intelligent. They didn't need to have computers. They didn't need to have printed matter. They didn't have to visualize things to memorize them. They didn't have TVs and films. They just memorized by sound vibration. Now they teach memory by visualization. They say you can remember 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 different things if you make pictures in your mind. You can make a, you know about this? You can make a list. One of the devotees was teaching this in Vrindavan to show one of the teaching principles, how you can memorize a list of things. And almost everybody was able to memorize 30 or 40 things by visualizing a chain of different things that were interrelated. They kind of flowed into one another. But Brahmins in Brahminical society, or I should say in Daivi Varnashram society, were able to, their minds were so powerful that they could memorize just by hearing. It just remained in the mind. So this power to remember is diminishing increasingly as Kali Yuga advances. It becomes necessary to have more and more artificial aids. Still in South India, where there has not been so much destruction of Vedic society, the students do very well in their mathematics. Sometimes there have been contests in which they just memorize. They can do big long divisions without any pencil or paper, and they would defeat sometimes. They would have a contest, a debate, with groups of other Indian children who would use calculators and computers. And sometimes they would defeat them because they were trained this way, and there's still some semblance of that great Brahminical culture. So just imagine the power, the Brahman Tejas, of those like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who could remember almost everything that they ever saw, heard, or read. They could apply the principles of the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita to just about any situation by their memory. Of course, it takes a Vaishnava to understand how exactly and where to draw upon Vedic wisdom in order to deal with the situations at hand. But this is what they became very expert at doing. So again, a Brahman could remember, but a Vaishnava, who is in the superior position, could also choose exactly what to act upon in order to do the best possible thing for the time, place, and circumstance. So another significant point in this verse is that one has to observe the prescribed rules and regulations. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yuktahara viharasya, when one engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, he still has to eat, sleep, defend, and mate, because there are necessities of the body. But he performs such activities in a regulated way. He has to eat Krishna prasad. He has to sleep according to regulated principles. The principle is to reduce the duration of sleep and to reduce eating, taking only what is needed to keep the body fit. In short, the goal is spiritual advancement, not sense gratification. Similarly, sex life must be reduced. Sex life is meant only for begetting Krishna-conscious children. Otherwise, there is no necessity for sex life. Nothing is prohibited, but everything is made yukta, regulated, with the higher purpose always in mind. By following all these rules and regulations of living, one becomes purified, and all misconceptions due to ignorance become nil. It is specifically mentioned here that the cause of material entanglement are completely vanquished. So if one is impure in one's habits, then or unregulated in one's habits, then it becomes very difficult to function, even in a material way. We see how, even in what would ordinarily be somewhat regulated, a person goes to work just to get enough to pay his mortgage or his rent, and very often gets up and then just runs to get ready and maybe takes a few cups of coffee and reads a few articles in the newspaper and gets in the car and drives for an hour or two to some building that's full of artificial air. He has to sit there for 3 or 4 hours reading everybody's toxic air that's been cycled and recycled in an air-conditioned building. And then he gets in the car again and drives another hour or two.